the canine condition. Come, sit, stay. Welcome to season two of the Canine Condition Podcast. I am your host, Jackie Pignol. Each episode is a conversation with a trustworthy dog rescue organization or animal welfare advocate that will leave you inspired and empowered. This is the why, where, and how to adopt or help a canine family member. The goal is to save homeless dogs and set you up for success with information and resources to raise and keep a healthy and well-balanced dog. Embark on this journey with me, and let's save humans' best friend together. Sometimes we are involved with something day in and day out, whether it's at our workplace, in our home routine, or something we do for fun. We get to know the ins and outs of the tasks like the back of our hand. We almost get into an autopilot mode. And a lot of times that works for us. It keeps us moving forward and helps us reach goals because we've gotten really good at something. But this sort of autopilot mode we can fall into, sometimes without realizing it, can also work against us. Sometimes we will forget to think outside the box or look at the bigger picture. We might be living with a narrative or pushing forward a narrative that may no longer be true or could actually be looked at from a different perspective in order to get us from point A to point B much faster, reaching many more people, and mostly in a much happier fashion along the way. My guest on the podcast today offers us that new outlook on animal welfare. She is a forward-thinking, go-getter, optimistic woman. She explores all options and creates new possibilities so we can all have a hand in saving more pets. I am speaking of Kathy Bissell, founder of the Bissell Pet Foundation. Kathy founded Bissell Pet Foundation, BPF, as a natural extension of her love for animals and her commitment to their welfare. The foundation's goal is to help reduce the number of animals in shelters and in other rescue organizations, and find a loving home for every pet. Hence their motto, until every pet has a home. With the help of generous supporters, BPF has awarded millions of dollars to their growing partner network of animal welfare organizations and has impacted the lives of an incalculable number of pets by funding pet adoption, spay-neuter, microchipping, and medical emergencies. With growing support and lots of boots on the ground, they are saving lives in all 50 states and Canada. It is my pleasure to bring you this conversation with Kathy, who will surely inspire you with all that she and her foundation do to help so many pets and people. Welcome to the Canine Condition Podcast, Kathy.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yes, let's talk about the Bissell Pet Foundation, but let's start with you telling us a little bit about how you got started on this mission, or what was the event, or was there a special dog that led you down this path?
Don't you think there's always that special dog that leads you down the path? I mean,
yes.
There's a dog that comes into your life that you can't believe was a shelter dog. I hadn't been exposed to any shelters. I never went into a shelter, but I was helping fundraise for a shelter. And this beautiful, regal black lab was brought to the party and came and sat next to me and next to my two black labs. And I was like, you have to go home with us. I mean, who are you? Why are you at the shelter? And that was the switch. That's why I dedicated so much time and now my life's work to saving animals in the shelter.
Oh, and what did you name that doggy?
That dog came with the name of Bear, and he was given up because they had gotten a new puppy and he was digging holes in the backyard, which meant he wasn't getting any exercise. And he was so beautiful and fit in so well. And my husband told me I could not keep him, that we weren't going to have three dogs. And he went away on that night and called me and said, did you bring the dog home? And I said, yes. He's sitting here with his head on my lap. And he said, we're not keeping that dog. And I said, well, we'll see. And then he came home on Monday. It was his 50th birthday. And I had taken a picture and blown it up and said, happy birthday. Member of our family. It was perfect.
That's great. So right now, I have to admit, I feel a little less guilty for having done almost the same thing with one of our dogs, because my hubby on this journey, obviously, he joined in. He came with me. We traveled a lot doing the documentary portion of our journey. And he was like, no more dogs. Let's help as many as we can. But
no more to the house. And, you know, you visit a certain shelter, a certain rescue, there's this connection. There was a picture of one dog that came up to him and she nuzzled her face in his legs. And I took that photo. And a year later, without knowing that that dog would be in our family, there was something about that dog. She had not been adopted. She'd been looked over time and time again. And I had her brought over on my birthday so that I could like feel less guilty. I was like, well, you said I could have anything I wanted.
So good.
I brought her over from Georgia to Los Angeles and I gave him that picture. And that was like the, here's your ticket to tonight's special dinner.
And then
love she joined
that story.
Us that day.
Oh, that is so neat. That
and they
so
have
neat.
A very special connection. So she joined our family. She's dog number six. So we definitely stopped fostering and bringing dogs into our home so we could pay a lot of attention to our six. But they are the motivation for this journey. So like you said, there is always that one dog.
Yeah. I mean, I have six dogs.
Oh, good.
And I have to say, all adopted, of course. And I have to say, I could easily do 10. Like, I could do 10. Six, my husband kept saying to me, you said three was our limit. And I said, I would never have said three was the limit, ever. So you're making that up. But anyway, right. I'm glad you have six, too. It's a magic number.
It is. They are wonderful. And each one has a story and has propelled this journey for me to connect with so many wonderful people who either don't know about the rescue mission, about adoption, or who, like you, have jumped on this wonderful journey of doing more for them and for humans, because it is also about the human condition, helping the dogs. And on that note, tell us where the organization, where are you guys located as an organization, and what is it like in your city and state, the canine condition, for lack of a better term?
So we're located in Grand Rapids, Michigan, the heart of the Midwest, great people, great animal lovers. The condition for animals is pretty good. I mean, I'm not going to say there aren't rural areas that need some help. Of course, your major cities always need help, and Detroit City is our biggest. They've had a lot of issues with strays on the streets. Their shelter, the animal control, is very full. And so we're working as an organization constantly to help them and network those dogs. We call them Detroit Specials. They're usually pit bulls, and they are phenomenal dogs. So they have a lot of pit bulls, and sometimes it's harder to move those pit bulls. A lot of the municipalities do. And so bringing in some purebred dogs on occasion to filter in for adoption is something we do in the state just to get the pit bulls noticed. No one's going in for the pit bull, but once they go in for the golden retriever, they meet the pit bull and they choose the pit bull over the golden. And that's what makes it so special.
Right. Yes. And I've heard that story. And, you know, I think it's happening in every city around the United States. The shelters are largely full. There might be some cities, some smaller towns in the, you know, very like east coast of the country or the northwest that can take in some of that influx. But like you're describing your city, I feel like that's the same here in Los Angeles and other organizations we've talked to around the country. So it really is a national crisis of not just dog homelessness, but dog overpopulation. So tell us about the goal of the organization as a whole. I know that you are a national organization trying to help dogs in every state or help as many shelters and rescue organizations as possible.
Yes, our goal is to get every pet a home. So that's kind of our tagline, until every pet has a home. So we really focus on, you know, adoption, spay neuter, transporting, disaster, microchipping, of course. And so we focus on a lot of that. And as you said, you know, across the country, across the board, most shelters are full, but every shelter is run differently and every shelter has a different way of doing things, different parts of the country. So we work in the South a lot because they have a lot of beautiful dogs, but they are overcrowded. Many homeowners have 30, 40 dogs. They're not fixed. So we work to do a lot of spay neuter and make it available to people in communities as well as the shelters. We do a lot of finding out what the needs are in different parts of the country because they're all different. You know, Texas, I always say it's like four states. You know, some of the shelters have 1,600 dogs. You know, if we could get people to adopt adopt, and they're not all big dogs. You know, big dogs are tough to move right now, but Texas has small dogs. And so, you know, if we could just tell people, please, you know, if you adopt, we can help bring in these animals and get them out of these overcrowded shelters. That's pretty much our mission.
Right. And, you know, I have obviously followed the organization, and I'm aware of the work that you do. And I've seen these transport missions. And I love that you call them missions, because it's not just a transport for one doggy or two doggies, which is always helpful, of course. But they're missions because you have to strategize, you have to plan ahead. Can you tell us about one? And if you don't mind, I particularly saw a video on your YouTube channel for a mission that was carried out last summer in El Paso, Texas. And I was so moved by the video and the veterinarian speaking to camera and some of the shelter workers. Tell us how that mission, or most missions, come about. How do you plan it?
So that in particular was because El Paso had 1,600 dogs, and they were at max capacity. You know, when you have that many dogs, you have disease. There's no hiding that. So it's just going to happen. And so they had an outbreak of distemper, and we went in with Maddie's Fund and University of Florida that supplied all the tests. We worked with the vet and the staff, which was amazing, and we distemper tested every single dog. And as soon as the distemper test came back negative, we moved them out. They were on our list to separate and get out of the shelter so that they had a chance. In the end, we moved out 250. We had tested 450, so we moved 250, but others were able to get out. And a lot of dogs lived because of that effort. I mean, not many dogs died of distemper. I think it was maybe a handful. But it's, you know, when you're called in by other organizations and working together is really important, you do what you need to do to save lives. So that's what was the El Paso. And cool enough, the vet who was working there has now come to work for us. She starts April 11th, and she's licensed in many states, and we are going to make efforts to go into different shelters across the country and really make a difference for so many pets. We're pretty excited.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, I love that. And, you know, these transport missions, you realize, like, every dog matters, and you see these faces, and you go, that dog has a story, past we don't know about, but from that moment where your organization takes, you know, them into your care and connects with other people, there's a story there to be told. And I get so moved by that. And I want my listeners to just think about that, to not think about just the blanket statement of homeless dogs or, oh, gosh, so many dogs without homes. But each face is a story.
What people don't realize is that a lot of these faces have come from homes where owners have died, and they were sleeping in a bed the day before and in a home with a family. And the owner might die, and the family doesn't want the dog, so it's going to the shelter. I mean, there are fantastic dogs, as you know, and I know, at the shelter. And it is tough to get people to realize that. I always say the hardest mission is like telling people, you know, go adopt. You will find that great animal, because people do want to turn off that side. But if you love dogs and you love cats, that's the first place you should go, because they will change your life for the better.
Right. And you will find, I mean, I have obviously mine from shelters and rescues that have pulled them from shelters, because I had my eye on one, but I was out of state and I'm like, who will help me? But I want to, you know, reiterate to listeners that may not go to shelters or have ever stepped in one, that rescue dogs and dogs in those shelters, like you said, are not damaged goods, that they probably were in a home the day before somebody surrendered them, or if they were picked up as a stray. You know, a lot of times the strays got away from someone. My first rescue dog is a Great Dane Pit Bull mix. She was maybe 1 year old, Dublin. She's the reason I started this entire journey, because I had never come across such a wonderful dog. She was a stray. We looked for her family. We knew she'd had to have a family. She wasn't in horrible shape, but she'd been out. Do you know what I mean? Never found one. The shelter never got owners, and we could not leave her there. And it was one of those things where you go, this baby girl is not used to sleeping on a concrete floor in a loud place, barking, surrounded by bars. And she's now almost 13.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, my gosh. Well, that speaks to another one of our pillars, is microchipping. that every single pet that the Bissell Pet Foundation is involved with gets a microchip, because we believe every pet should find their home. Because there are so many strays, and people don't realize, I think sometimes people think a microchip is a GPS. It's not a GPS, but if it's scanned, it will get your pet back home. And some, I will say, some pets never get scanned when they're found by people, but at some point a vet might just scan it and say, wait a minute, this is an owned pet by somebody else, and the pet ends up going home after 4 or 5 years. So microchips are super important.
I agree. I absolutely advocate for that. And, you know, some of the places I have helped in the South, in rural areas, people don't have access to those places with microchips, or their vet doesn't microchip because they're, you know, in a small remote place. Sometimes it's hard to convince people that you're right. It's not a GPS. We're not trying to track you or keep track of you and your dog. It's most like if you lose your dog. So it's also about, I think, spreading that education of what a microchip is and what it means, because so many people are resistant to get it. Even in cities like mine, I'm advocating everywhere I go, at the gas station, wherever, you know. And I meet people who don't have their dogs microchipped. And I'm like, how could I say it to them so they won't say no? You know, I'm always trying to think of ways.
It's just such an easy thing, even to just microchip it and put it in the shelter, a shelter's name, you know, instead of your name, if you're worried about it, just so it can be tracked back to your city. But yes, it's such an easy thing. And a microchip, it takes 2 seconds to put in the dog, and it's how you get your dog back if you lose it. And they can run hundreds of miles. People don't realize, but in a week's time, they can cross into another state and they're gone for good without a microchip.
Absolutely. And it would help keep the shelters. A large number of dogs that don't get recovered, don't get found, they do end up in the shelter having to be rehomed. And that's why those numbers sometimes reflect that. It's not necessarily homeless dogs that never had a home. It's just lost pets. It's really, yeah, unfortunate. I want to bring attention to your blog, Kathy. You have this wonderful blog, and you bring really, really insightful topics when you post it. It is on the website for any of our listeners who want to go and read some of these wonderful excerpts that Kathy has written. And I want to bring attention to the current one, which was for March 2nd. I'm going to pull it up here. And if you don't mind, I just want to read a few sentences and have you expand upon this idea, which I have to tell you, even for me, who have been traveling the country and trying to help, and I see posts all the time with all kinds of messages, this really got me. And I had to sit back and go, oh my goodness, she's right. We have to change this narrative. So without spoiling it further, let me read this. And this is from Kathy's blog. It says, this is part of it. I'm just picking parts and then you can expand on it for us. If you are posting that we need to save pets from kill shelters rather than buying from pet stores, you are missing the mark and throwing up a barrier for adoption. Labeling municipal shelters as kill shelters, in quotes, is literally driving the public away from them. These messages are also hurtful for shelter staff, the vast majority of which are first responders and heroes. So having said that, and having not thought about the fact that the message we put out there will draw people away from, why would you step into a kill shelter, right? You're right. I thought about that and I go, oh my gosh, if people think that's where people kill dogs and those are the people that kill dogs, why would you ever go in there to get one? Instead of going, hey, this is a wonderful place where you can save wonderful dogs. So talk to me about that a little bit.
So I think it's really interesting because people do label a lot of shelters kill shelters, and those are typically the municipal shelters in the cities. So, you know, you go to Texas and they have lots of dogs. It's a people problem, not a shelter problem. It's a community problem. It's people not spaying and neutering. It's people losing their dogs and not going to find them. Shelters are going to be overcrowded. There is no place, there's no relief. There's nothing you can do. What are you going to do? I mean, people call me all the time. They should start a sanctuary. Well, a sanctuary? I mean, who's gonna be there to run the sanctuary? Where are you going to put all these dogs that all these people have been irresponsible about? So it's not really the shelter's problem. They just have to take care of the problem because that's what they're told to do there in a city. So there, I mean, I will tell you, this past weekend, there was a shelter facing some euthanasia. And it was very tearful for all of us because the people that work at the shelter did not want to have to put any of these animals down. But their bosses came in and said, you have got, these numbers are way too high. We can't manage it. And you have got to. And they did everything they could. They even locked up the euthanasia drugs and didn't come in over the weekend. So the dogs did not get euthanized and an adoption event happened and it was all great. But these people suffer. They suffer equally. So calling them out and making them look like they're bad people, this is a job. People have jobs. And so we talked about that as well. This is an interesting thing because they said they had to leave the building on Friday and not come back till Monday. And they were like not going to leave, but then they would have been fired. So this was the thing. Do you get fired and then what? Then all of the animals you care about are now in trouble. Or do you stay and fight for your animals? And that's what they did. And so euthanasia happens at shelters all over the country. I mean, I practically go to bed crying every night when I hear stories. But it's the good people in these shelters, municipal shelters, fighting to save the lives of the animals that they've fallen in love with. How do you not fall in love with the animals that come through your door? So don't label them. You know, don't label them. Get people in there to help move their animals that they love, that they know are great animals. But a lot of people don't go into municipal shelters, and they should. They should always look at their municipal shelter and then go to their humane societies that might not have this issue. But city shelters are always burdened. They're the ones that take in the animals. And so they need the most help.
I know, and I feel like as a society, we're asking, you know, we've voted for people who have put laws in place to have city shelters and municipal shelters, to have places to go so that our streets aren't filled with strays or people don't know what to do with their dog and don't want it anymore. And then once we get those facilities and everything is in place, now we're complaining because as a society, we're like, but don't kill them and don't fill them up and don't. And so it's almost like people have to think, all right, well, we have to give and give something up, right? We can't just have it all and pretend like it doesn't exist because it's here and now and we have to deal with it.
We have to be responsible as pet owners. Don't let your unneutered male wander the streets and impregnate other people's dogs and vice versa. I mean, spay and neuter your pet when you get them so that we can get the populations down so that we don't have to deal with all the sadness because it takes a piece of everybody's hearts.
Yes, it really does. And, you know, speaking of helping the different shelters and all the places that you are in touch with, your organization, as I mentioned earlier, is a national organization. And a lot of rescue organizations are just for their city or their community or, you know, adopt out or help out in their own state. So that's one of the things I also love about this organization is that you're able to help spread this message to the country. And you have this wonderful page on the organization's website. It's titled Our Work in Action, Making an Impact in 50 States. And then you can go and click on a bunch of organizations and some of the funds that have been raised for them. Can you expand a little bit upon that and share with us how organizations can partner up with you?
Sure. So we started 10 years ago and we're small, but we knew that we wanted to start in Michigan and our impact was good. So that's how we started reaching out. It was a slow reach. It was through our adoption events. We wanted to partner with people, but we wanted to make sure that we knew that they were legit organizations. So it's been a build over 10 years and we travel around. We are busy like traveling and meeting people in shelters and going to as many shelters as we can when we can. We've been slowed down because of COVID, but we're back up and running. And it's getting to know what the needs are and then being able to grant them what they need. And a lot of it's personal. A lot of it's the important spay-neuter, microchipping, you know, adoption, very important. But then sometimes you'll come across a situation that might be a little bit more difficult. We're working with a shelter in Mississippi. They have nothing. They have nothing. We've been paying for their heat. We've been paying for their food for their animals because they're probably one of the worst shelters I've ever seen. And we're going to go down there and hopefully hands-on change that shelter. So it's different. And as you go across the country, that's the beauty of it. You see what's needed, and that's our work in action. We're out there. We're boots on the ground. We're doing what we can. When a shelter calls us and needs help, we respond.
Okay. And can I ask you, when a shelter is in those conditions or doesn't have the funding, is it because it's a city or it's not state funded, it's private, or I don't really know. You know, there's so many ins and outs to that.
Yeah, it's usually a municipality. So it's either city, county, parish funded. So I've talked to the commissioners, let's say, and, you know, they say, listen, we don't have enough money for our own people in this community, let alone the dogs, you know, vaccinating the dogs like you want. So we say, okay, we'll pay for your vaccinations. We'll pay to keep the heat on. That's easy. And we'll work with you to try and move your animals out of a community that has no one coming to adopt. So we look at every situation differently. We're working in another parish in Louisiana where we're funding a building, something we don't always do, but it's needed there because the hurricane hits and their building was devastated and they didn't have money to rebuild. But as a community, the dogs that are being picked up can use that building, but the people whose homes are destroyed can also use that building. So, you know, it's for everybody. It's going to be a community shelter for animals. And, you know, those are the things you do because you're there and you see what needs to happen. Raising funds is always the tough part. That's always the hardest part, getting enough money to make it happen. But, you know, I just say to my team, we use up what we have. And when we don't have any more, that's when we have to stop and wait for rebooting of next year. So we do the best we can with what we have.
Wonderful. And, you know, I feel like in those communities, if the people of those communities feel like, oh, wow, somebody's coming in here because they care about us, because they care about our animals, it almost lifts the morale, you know, of that area, whether it's a small town or a smaller city. But if they need that much help and they're getting the attention and the help, they see, hey, we matter. So, okay, we're going to help too, because they care about their surroundings. It's almost about empowering the humans. When I read your blog, I kept thinking, if we empowered volunteers and shelter workers and let them know on a daily basis, thank you for doing what you do, for dealing with the ins and outs, with personalities, with people dumping dogs, with sick dogs, puppies, pregnant dogs, sick, older dogs, thank you. You know, instead of vilifying them in a post, I feel like they would see that and they would feel that and they would be more excited to go to work and more excited about, hey, I'm here to save lives, not end lives, right?
And those people that say they always really care and they put up, it's a kill shelter, they're doing so much harm to those animals that they think they're saving. They're not. They're really hurting. So it is getting on board, getting a mindset change. Hey, I was in my late 40s before I ever even walked in a shelter. I mean, I'm shameful. It's shameful. And I wish I could do it over. I wish I could be in my 20s and, you know, be that person because I'd make that much more of a difference. But I do say it's never too late. So no matter who you are or what age you are, get in there and help because you can make that difference. Even if it's one animal, you've made a difference.
I agree. And, you know, it's okay to not know, but that's why we're here. And once you know, you can't pretend like you don't know.
I know exactly where you're going with that, and that's exactly how I feel. It's true. You cannot pretend because a lot of people have excuses. Well, I didn't know. Oh, I didn't, you know, I shouldn't buy a dog online or I shouldn't go to a puppy store. They know. They're pretending not to know, but the education is out there and we're all getting the word out. And I thank you for that because you're going to make a huge difference for so many mindset. It's a mindset change.
It is. And I thank you because when I read your blog, and I know I keep talking about it, but it just impacted me so much because I thought I need to, when I see these posts, maybe not share it, but maybe make comments about, hey, how about let's go in and see how we can prevent euthanasia at this shelter? How can we help more animals get out of this shelter? And it's simple phrases like that that will maybe get other people to go, oh, okay, let me not focus on that. Oh, these people are killing dogs, and let's change that. Let's turn it around. That is a big idea that we're walking away with from you, from your foundation, and I absolutely love it. And I want to touch upon the empty the shelters phrase, because you want to find every dog a home, and that's our ultimate goal. I've spoken to other organizations who are also about emptying the shelters and getting to that no euthanasia day. You know, how wonderful if my son, who's now six, one day in his adult life could be like, oh, what do you mean euthanasia? We don't kill dogs here. What are you talking about?
Awesome.
That to me would be the ultimate.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I don't think it's impossible. It could take decades. But look, in five states around the United States, it's taken decades, but we've gotten to no puppies are sold in pet stores. And California is one of those states.
I know. It's great.
When I was a kid, we'd go to this mall called the Beverly Center, and you'd go to the second floor, and the minute you get out of the escalators on the left-hand side, all the puppies in the glass window.
I saw them. I was there.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't that long ago. It wasn't that long ago. It was about 8 years ago. I cried my eyes out.
They are no more. And so we are making progress.
Mm-hmm.
We are baby steps, but I think we can get to empty the shelters one day, right? So speaking of that, I find that it's a very positive and well-intentioned mission, yet I do hear a lot of negative talk around it. You know, people might be, it might be what I call uninformed chatter. But talk to us about why, what's the positive of that mission, empty the shelters, rather than the people who just speak out of turn or make comments about, oh, it's just about getting the numbers down and showing numbers down, but where are the dogs really going, blah, 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 you know.
So this is the great thing. When we do these events, we ask every shelter that participates to take pictures of the adopters. And you cannot believe the joy our team gets. And we host Empty the Shelters as well. We haven't in the last 2 years because of COVID, but where multiple shelters would come and you see these adopters. And listen, people are very careful about who they adopt to because these are their babies. So they're not going to just adopt out to somebody they don't think is appropriate. So they're careful about the adoptions. And then the adopters that come in, I have had people stop me and say, thank you for this opportunity because we had a dog, we have a dog, but we weren't going to get a second dog. But you made it possible for us because you're paying for the adoption fee to bring another dog in. And it's wonderful. So we track it all. We track the adopters. We have a survey and we reach out to them after the event and we ask them to fill in this information. And, you know, it's a survey. We get about 20% of these surveys back. So we don't get all of them back, but we get great responses. You know, were you asked proper questions? You know, was your pet spayed or neutered? We want to make sure that they're also getting what we expect the shelters to give them. And it's been fantastic. So the shelters all want to join in. We never have enough money to bring everyone in, but we're working on that because the more Empty the Shelters events we can do, the more adoptions we can take, you know, have happen. And these dogs are healthy. They're spayed or neutered. They're vaccinated. The adopter has now saved $400 and they're getting a great pet, a pet that they know their personality, unless they're getting a puppy, which there are plenty. So it's a great event. And I just will wrap it up on one thing. The one we did in December, which is usually a little bit smaller, we did it for 2 weeks because this past year has been a tough year for large dogs. And dogs and cats were adopted to the tune of 15,000 in 2 weeks in 245 shelters.
Whoa.
In 45 states. That's big. And we're hoping that means people are choosing adoption. So we're getting the message out. We're getting these dogs into homes. The shelter staff is happy because now these animals are in homes. It's not about numbers. It's about happiness all the way around. Adopters are happy. Animals are happy. Shelters are happy. And so we're changing a mindset. And that's important.
It's huge. You're also, I feel like it's an opportunity to connect with those families, to educate them on what you say, the microchipping, the spay and neuter, because it's all been done for them.
Yeah.
And sometimes those are the simple things that have kept even people that I know, whether acquaintances, friends, or family, from adopting, is the costs.
Yeah.
The costs involve the spay and neuter or the vaccinations, you know, if they're puppies, the first four rounds of vaccines, all that stuff. But if you are in a place where you ever see clear the shelters or there is an event, do not hesitate to either volunteer, take part in it, or go adopt your next, you know, furry family member, because it sounds to me like a wonderful way to make progress.
It does.
And leave all that negative chatter behind.
Yep. And plus, the animals coming out, used to be dogs, higher adoption than dogs. Then it was equal with cats, dogs and cats. And now it's actually cats. And people are adopting cats in pairs, which is really nice because, you know, cats don't get a fair shake. So the Empty the Shelters has really, really been positive for so many animals. I think in total, last year, we adopted out 33,000. So it's a big number, but it's a big number for awareness and happiness all the way around.
Right, right. And spay and neuter. I feel like I want to walk around with signs all the time. It's just, and let's talk about, before I let you go, but you know, I could talk to you forever because I have so many wonderful questions to ask him. I love this.
We should get together. I love it too.
Talk to us about the wonderful Grateful Pet Tour. I saw it on your website. Just tell us all about it. Tell me a story, a feel-good story about the Grateful Pet Tour.
I'll tell you. We have a lot of feel-good stories, but I'll tell you how it started. We were in Maricopa County, Arizona, and we were doing an Empty the Shelter event, and we went to the animal control. Maricopa County Animal Control had two buildings. So we're at one building one day, went to the other building, and a lot of animals were adopted, and there was this beautiful dog right in the center of the room, black and white, so sweet. And we said, what happened to this dog? And one of the team members said, it didn't get adopted because it had a skin allergy and it was, you know, had some patches of no skin. And so people thought this dog was ugly. So it's like, what? Oh my gosh. So we decided, and that's where the Grateful Pet came from. We literally took that dog and told one of the rescue groups there to take it to the vet, and we would pay for it so it could get adopted. It was $300 worth of medicine, and that was it. And within 2 days, that dog was adopted. Now, that dog sat through a big, huge event, and no one picked it. But once the skin started to heal and look better, it got adopted right away. And the people were so proud of that dog that they made their own Instagram page for him.
Oh, really?
And so that was the start of Grateful Pets. So as we tour shelters, we say, is there a pet here that needs some extra help? And they might say, we need a leg amputation. We, you know, this one's sick from this one, whatever it is. And we say, we'll take care of it, and that'll be our Grateful Pet. And we put money towards it up to $2,500. However, I will say that we've gone above that on occasion because you can't not try and fix a pet for less. So the pets go to the vet. And now in some parts of the country, I have vets that call me just randomly to say, I know you're not here, but this animal came in. Can you help it? And of course, I feel like, you know, I'm going to help it, of course. So I work with certain vets that I can trust. Yeah. So that's where the Grateful Pet came from. And oh gosh, we've had, I think, about 250 Grateful Pets since that time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, it's wonderful. I love the title of it, just the idea of it, you know. It's kind of that chain reaction that I feel like we shouldn't judge a book by its cover. We say it all the time to each other as humans. We learn about that, about not judging people and their looks. And yet, I feel like we have to remind now each other not to judge a dog by their looks. You know, get to know them, connect with their eyes. They're so soulful. Touch their paws, hold them in your hand when you visit them. And I feel like you will find a connection with a pet that you might not have adopted in the first place.
Yeah, we always say that's so true, because you go into a shelter to adopt a dog and you think you know what you're going for. And then you get in there and you start to look around, and the dog that might be shy in the back of the kennel that doesn't come forward, you might meet their eyes and say, you know what, you need to come with me, because you see they're scared. So you totally change your mindset when you get to the shelter. You think you're going in for one thing, but and I will tell you, you're probably the same way. I go to shelters all the time. There's rarely a dog or cat that I don't want. And so having six at home, my husband's lucky. He is lucky. I remind him of that all the time.
Right? I would high five you right now if we were in person, because I say the same thing, you know, I can't help myself.
Yep. There's so many beautiful pets.
Absolutely. And until every pet has a home, we will keep sharing the message. We will keep advocating and hopefully just sharing information so that our listeners, our family, our friends, and your family and friends and coworkers just talk about it. Just make it a conversation piece. And if that's all that you ever do, you might be planting a seed for someone who will go and adopt a dog or volunteer and help make a difference for a pet, whether it's a dog or a cat, a guinea pig, bunnies. You can find all kinds of animals now in shelters and sanctuaries. And on that note, tell us, Kathy, where our listeners can find, follow, and support Bissell Pet Foundation.
Oh, you're so sweet. If they go to BisselPetFoundation.org, they can find everything there.
Great.
Really, thank you so much. And follow us on social media, because we have a lot of stories that we're telling. I have a page on Facebook and Instagram, and it's a verified check next to my name, and also Bissell Pet Foundation. And we sometimes share the same stories, but we have so much going on. We share a lot of different stories. Right now, we have a Feed the Shelters campaign going on, because people don't realize so many shelters don't have food. I mean, think about it. There are shelters that don't have food. And how do you keep animals peaceful? You know, when they're peaceful when their stomach's full, but if they don't have food, and cat food has been very difficult to find. So we're doing a big campaign right now called Feed the Shelters. We do it for a month. Purina has stepped up to help us with a $20,000 grant, and we'll match that to anybody that donates right now. And then they'll ship the food out for us, which is great.
Oh, that's great. So just so you know, Bissell Pet Foundation could be in your corner of the country. So please connect with them on social media. I will have those live links in the show notes for this episode, so anyone can easily scroll down and connect with Bissell Pet Foundation with one easy click. Our listeners should also know that I am not getting paid to advocate for any one organization or individual on this podcast. I choose to interview guests from organizations that I know are doing the good work for dogs and for people across America. Thank you, Kathy, so much for your time, your knowledge, your experience in sharing all these beautiful messages and just pointing us in the right direction.
Oh, thank you. I so appreciate it. And I hope we get to meet in person.
Absolutely. Me too. We'll make it happen.
Well, thank you so much. Such a pleasure.
Thank you. It is so important for all of us to have these conversations, not only with people who are actively involved in animal welfare, but with our friends, our neighbors, or family members who may not know anything about the cause. Wouldn't it be nice if we lived in a world where it was normal to just help, rather than watch a problem grow and wait for somebody else to handle it? We are that somebody else. Or maybe we need to normalize asking for help. Many people give up their pets because they are afraid or ashamed of asking for help when they need it. But it is easier in animal welfare to help a family keep their dog than to help them rehome their dog, especially if the pet was surrendered to a shelter. This conversation with Kathy highlights all of the amazing and positive outcomes that can happen for thousands of people and pets when more of us work together to accomplish a goal. Bissell Pet Foundation is proof of that. They represent true collaboration in action. And since the Bissell Pet Foundation is a national organization and extending help to Canada as well, there really is no excuse not to help until every pet has a home. I hope you will reach out to Bissell Pet Foundation, and whether you want to help them out in your state or across the nation, please know there is something you can do. You will be making a positive difference. Thank you for listening to this conversation. Please press subscribe on our podcast and tell all of your animal-loving friends about it. Until next time, hang on to those leashes.
The canine condition. Come, sit, stay.